the best show here.
Best show! Best show! Best show! Yeah!
The Linux Link Tech Show is on.
Is on.
Your link to GNU Linux and the latest technology. 2 hours of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Free software, free speech, open technology,
and open mic.
I love it.
Now, live from the Linux Link Tech Show studios, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up and take it away.
I think we actually have to change that to live from the Linux Tech Show asterisk server.
Yeah. Sure. Well, why don't we let Mr. Davila talk about his awesome news?
Hey, guys. My wife had the baby last night. I got a little munchkin. Darius, I'm going to be opening up a gladiatorial school pretty soon. My wife is doing pretty well. The first baby that we had 3.5 years ago, she had a C-section after 24 hours of labor and torture. Yesterday, we went out to dinner, and then she's complaining of gas pain. And I asked her if she would call the doctor, and she was like, no. And then we went home, and she lied down for a bit, and all of a sudden, she woke up, and she started screaming. She's like, my water broke. She started having contractions. Contractions 5 minutes apart. So 5 minutes apart, if anyone's trying to kid him, it's pretty close. So you got to get to the hospital as soon as possible. So I had to bring my wife and my 3.5-year-old son in the car. We gunned it. We got to the hospital, and within an hour, the baby was born. There was no time for any drugs or anything. So she was 100% completely natural. No drugs, nothing. She was in a lot of pain, but everything went pretty well. The baby's doing pretty well. My wife's good. I just wanted to, say thank you to everybody who's given me the best wishes, thoughts, and prayers. I really appreciate it. You guys are the best. And that's pretty much it, just taking it easy. Hopefully we're going to get out of the hospital tomorrow from here. I still have a little munchkin, a little 6-pounder, little guy. Just like my other son, a little mom, a little baby. But other than that, everything's pretty good. My wife's just dealing with some pain. And hopefully you get a little bit, but let's go home tomorrow.
Cool. Well, I wish you the best of luck.
So I'm going to go back to do the family thing. I'm going to go see I can help out with my wife and take care of my son. And I'll talk to you guys next week.
Yeah, have a good one.
Thank you, guys. Take care. Good night.
Thank you.
Enjoy.
Well, good for Pat. Some good stuff. And as we know that, what?
I said if you look at the IRC, Paul couldn't call in because Pat was on the phone.
Oh,
didn't even think about that one.
Wonder.
No,
I thought we had two lines that were able to call in.
No, I think we only have one that comes in.
I'm trying to read. Where is he?
He's LAS up there.
Your phone's ringing, isn't it?
Oh, that's my other line, yeah.
I'm surprised. I thought that we had the capability of two people.
Well, I'm going to IRC him and tell him to give a call in now. That should work.
Okay. And we have a good guest tonight for all you audio aficionados waiting to come in. We have
still busy
Sean Ryle, no, not Sean Ryle, Paul Davis, developer of Ardour. It's still busy. How can it be busy? Nobody else is on. Do Did you try calling it yourself?
No, I haven't, no.
Hold on a minute. Let me try calling it. Ah, the wonders of the tech show.
It wouldn't be the tech show unless we screwed something up or something got screwed up on us at showtime.
I just got right through.
Well, he said he just emailed and said it was IRC'd and just said it was busy still.
Let me make sure he has the right phone number.
I don't even know it off the top of my head. Yeah, the Linux Link troubleshooting show.
Yeah. Let's just announce our telephone over the air. People could call it, no problem. Well, you know, they're welcome to call
it. Well, it's on the webpage, isn't it?
I don't know, is it?
I know, I thought it was, but cause didn't we want like people to like call and leave us messages there for a while?
I don't know. I don't see it on the webpage anymore.
Oh, maybe it got taken off. I thought it was on there.
Well, what's our contact page go to? Oh, it's a mail to. Hello?
Hello?
How you doing, Les? Paul?
Oh, this is Seldom from the chat room.
Oh, okay.
All right, well,
you just posted the number, so I thought I'd say hey.
Oh, well, thank you.
All right, I'll free up the line.
Okay, take it easy.
Thank you.
I just called.
He was a little too excited.
Well, we've figured out that the phone line works.
Okay.
Dun, 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 dun. Oh, well, so what else is new with you, Dan? While you TM, I'm going to make you, like, do multiple things at once.
What else is new? I don't, I'm trying to get him. I'm going to see if I can get his phone number and call him directly.
Yeah. Probably be the best way. It saves him on long distance calls.
He's right near Link. Maybe he could go pick Link up.
Alright. Yeah, that's not, what do you say, Philly? Okay.
Yeah,
edge of Philly. And that's where Link is, too. That's the reason Link's not on tonight. For those who don't pay attention to his blog, Link has moved.
All right, I'm going to transfer.
He's down in
the conference room, okay?
Link Downingtown, I think, is where he is now. On it for his new job.
Paul.
Hello.
Hey, who's this? Is it Pat?
No, Pat couldn't. Pat had.
Oh, this is Alan then, or Dan?
Alan and Dan. I'm Dan.
Hey, Alan and Dan.
And that's Alan.
Paul Davis.
And this is Paul Davis, a developer of Ardour.
So they say.
Yep. And, you know, Paul, I'm going to be honest with you. Both Alan and myself, I believe, have looked at Ardour, but don't have the hardware to run it on. Pat was the guy who was running it more than we were. But right. I'm really, you know, we're really interested in it, and I know our guests are. So why don't you start off by explaining exactly what Ardour is and its purpose?
Well, it's a type of program that is generally called a digital audio workstation, which is a rather broad term. It just basically means a piece of software for dealing with audio in digital form. In practice, that means that it's the recording, mixing, and processing audio, typically for recording music. And it's specifically designed for recording in situations where you need to record lots of tracks and edit them along some kind of a timeline, like a song that has a beginning and an end. That's as distinct from sound file editors, which a lot more people have experience with. This is programs like Audacity and so forth, which are generally designed for editing a single existing sound file and modifying it in some way, you know, perhaps cutting off the beginning or the end of it. Ardour is designed for working with with lots of sound files, with lots of recordings, with lots of tracks, and building up the sort of material that you hear on CDs of all kinds, or I guess on MP3s or OGs of all kinds these days. And it's designed to really compete with a number of the proprietary applications that have been around for between probably 8 to 12 years that do this sort of thing.
So you're looking at, like, what is it, Pro Sound Tools or whatever it's called?
Pro Tools is the sort of market leader in this area. It's interesting how hard it is to find people that really love Pro Tools. There are plenty of other pieces of software in this area that people actually are really enthusiastic about. Pro Tools seems to have risen to the top of the pile in spite of the fact that a lot of people don't really like it all that much. I think that's because when it was first written, it was the first program that did this sort of stuff in a way that professionals could actually use it and know that they had a reliable system. That has changed, but it hasn't really changed Pro Tools being the thing that most studios and most recording engineers still use these days. I don't know if Arda will change that as well, but we certainly hope to try.
Now, is Ardour kind of, I mean, would it be, like, would people, like us, we record primarily through Audacity,
right.
But would Ardour suit our needs? Would that be to be able to use?
Well, in many senses, it's sort of overkill for your needs. If what you're recording is a stereo or a mono signal, and you're basically going to press, you know, a record button, and leave it to record for a while, and then you're going to stop, and you're going to do relatively limited editing of that, in the sense that you might cut the beginning and the ends off, you might edit some parts out in the middle, you might change the volume in certain places, stuff like that, then tools like Audacity will do pretty much exactly what you want, and they'll do it, in many senses, you know, in a lot more obvious way than Arda will allow you to do. So I think, you know, for the purpose of producing podcasts and so forth, I mean, I know people who use it for that purpose, but in many senses it's overkill, and most of those people are using it because they're also using it for producing music. The big difference when you go into the area of music production is that you are not typically dealing with just, you know, a mono or a stereo recording. You're dealing with, you know, I know that there was a demo session that we had on Arda at one point that had 67 tracks in it.
Uh-huh.
So you've got, you know, 67 independent inputs that came in. They could have been a guitar, a didgeridoo, you know, a singer plus five backup singers, you know, who knows what. And you need to be able to work with that material, you know, both independently and collectively. And tools like Audacity and the other sound file editors are not really built for that kind of thing. The other big difference with Arda is that its editing is completely non-destructive, in the sense that everything that you do inside of Arda, with one exception, will never modify any data that you have on disk. So when you do edits in Arda, you're not actually rewriting sound files. And that's a very important thing from the point of view of music production, because people frequently make edits and then want to just back them out. And when you're doing that on a track that's consuming 50, 60, 80 gigabytes of data, and you edit it and then realize, oops, I need to undo. It's not easy to do that with a system like the one that the Audacity uses. So I think, as I said, for people who are doing podcasts and, you know, for example, they just like to play their acoustic guitar and record that and perhaps them singing over the top of it, then Audacity can be a fine tool. But once you start to move up to more complex musical arrangements and so forth, then you really need to move to a tool like Arda.
So then I assume it also accepts MIDI input, yes?
At this point, not strictly speaking. It has long used or been able to use MIDI for control and also for syncing with other systems. Typically when you're using it in professional studios, particularly ones that handle video, there's a requirement to run it in a way that will sync with a video playback engine, and we can use MIDI for doing that. The currently available version of the program does not do MIDI sequencing. There is a version that was worked on last summer as part of the Google Summer of Code program by a student from Carleton University in Ottawa called Yves Oberlard. And that does do MIDI recording and playback, and it gives you MIDI tracks that you can edit these regions of stuff. What you can't do with that branch, which Dave will be working on thanks to Google this summer, is allowing you to actually edit the MIDI data itself in the same way that other MIDI sequences will allow you to do. And it's been one of those features that lots of people have asked us to implement. It was never really on the original, you know, task list for the program, but as the years have gone by, it's become fairly clear that it really is a, I'm not sure I want to say critical, but it's a, it would be an incredibly valuable thing for a lot of our existing users to be able to do that kind of thing inside of Otter.
We've had some of our listeners send in some questions about Ardour, and one of the things, and I've noticed this too, is and is probably a result of the you know the capabilities of the application. The interface seems very complex. And is that typical of these type of applications?
Yes, it is. I mean, there are some. Well, actually, you can see the same thing happening in the Windows, and in fact, in the OS X world, happening in response to exactly this same kind of complaint. There are programs like Reaper on Windows, for example, which has been developed by Justin Frankel, who's the guy who did Winamp originally, and he also did a couple other things. And Reaper is, in many senses, specifically being created in response to some of the complaints from people that, you know, God, I just can't figure out how to use Pro Tools or Nuendo or Sonar. It's too complicated. It does too much. I just want a tool that I can record my band. In the OS X world, we've got tools like GarageBand, for example. GarageBand does have a few additional bits of functionality that go above and beyond sort of a basic recording and editing tool. But in many senses, GarageBand is a sort of massive slimming down of the functionality of Logic, which is now Apple's, well, arguably one of their two flagship digital audio workstations. So, yeah, it's definitely the case that the professional end of the digital audio workstation spectrum, you know, these tools are very, very complicated. You have to remember that audio engineering is something that you can go to school for 2 years, 4 years for, and the people who are really good at it are people who've been doing it for 10 or 15 years. There's a little bit of an assumption among people who are just computer users who want to do music of sort of, you know, how hard can this be? I record stuff, it works, right? And unfortunately, that's not really how things happen. I mean, you can certainly make some music in that way, and I think that there's a definite need on Linux as well as the other platforms for tools that are a little bit more friendly for musicians to use. But if you're actually an audio engineer who knows their way around a large mixing console, the interface to these sorts of programs is not really complicated at all. It's actually very straightforward.
So how has the industry adopted Ardour?
Well, we've had some support from several companies in the industry. Many people know that last year I was employed by Solid State Logic, which is a very old, very old in this tech area, very well-respected manufacturer of high-end mixing consoles. I think until a couple of years ago, their cheapest product was $100,000, and they would go up to several million. They decided that they really liked what I was doing with Ardour and were interested in sponsoring it to encourage its development. We've also had another mixing console company, Harrison, who've been involved with Ardour for, I think, 2 or 3 years now. And they've actually bought out the first commercial product that is based on Ardour. And recently I've entered into an arrangement that we haven't had a press release about it, but it'll be coming out in the next couple of days. There's the largest audio engineering and media school worldwide, which is called SAE. They have branches all over the world. They are now sponsoring ARDA as well, with a goal to producing a version that would be targeted at their new students. We've also had, it hasn't been so much the case recently, but I've actually had a lot of phone calls with people from various companies in the industry who are interested in what I'm doing. The problem is we run into the same old issues that, you know, almost anybody who's involved in open source faces of, you know, companies trying to figure out, well, how do we actually make money on this? And it's a very hard question to answer. I haven't had any response yet from any of the sort of established players in the industry. I do know there was an interesting response recently. Harrison were displaying their product that's based on ARDA at a trade show, I think last month. And they had an entire episode of the TV show 24 on there that you could remix using ARDA. And one of the guys from Pro Tools actually apparently called up Fox. I think 24 is on Fox, either Fox or NBC. And
Fox.
And immediately said, hey, are you guys mixing 24 on ARDA? And apparently was like totally stressed out by the whole idea. You know, Fox laughed and said, no, we just, you know, we use all the stuff we always used before. So, you know, I don't know if DigiDesign that makes Pro Tools takes what we're doing as any kind of a threat or any serious competition for what they're doing. But I think those companies are certainly aware of our existence and their feature set that we offer.
Now, are you yourself an audio engineer?
No, I'm not. I got into this in a rather strange, well, maybe not a very strange way. I mostly wanted to make my own music. And I started doing this on probably 1998, I think. And for lots of reasons that are probably not worth going into, I was fairly committed to doing it on Linux. And had this naive belief that, well, of course, all the tools for doing this must exist, right? I mean, it's an operating system. People do stuff like this. And I very rapidly found out that was not the case. And I thought, well, you know, I'm also a programmer, so I guess I could just sort of write some of this stuff myself. I think if I'd have understood then what was really involved in this, I would never have even started. but I began writing a few MIDI tools that I wanted for compositional purposes. And then switched over to, you know, trying to write tools that I could use to record the things I was doing. And to be honest, I had absolutely zero time for any musical work whatsoever. I mean, I don't think I've actually tried to make my own music in at least 2 or 3 years now. It's rather ironic that actually I have now created most of the tools that I would ever have imagined using, but I have no time to use them. So
then how do you do your testing, or is that left up to the community?
Well, we, having been doing this for 7 years now, I have, you know, picked up fairly substantial knowledge about audio engineering. We have a very large community of beta testers who are an interesting mix of people. Some of them are audio engineers. Some of them are wannabe audio engineers who are computer hackers or computer users. Some of them are computer hackers who know nothing about audio engineering. And, you know, between that set of people, we managed to actually get lots of very useful testing done. We also get very good feedback, as I said. I mean, when Solid State Logic was paying me, you know, they were a pretty good source of information about, you know, things we were doing right, things we were doing wrong. And Harrison has been playing that role as well. I think we'll get even more feedback through this collaboration with SAE because they're not, you know, their schools are not only full of audio engineers doing teaching, but they're also full of all these students who no doubt have their own ideas of that, you know, how things should work and so forth. So, you know, I hesitate to call it a beta testing community. I don't really think of it that way, but, you know, the user community acts as a very important testing resource for us. And there are people in that community who do know a great deal about audio engineering.
One of the questions coming in from the IRC is, does Ardour support or have any functionality for like drum machines or synths?
Well, let's explain another piece of technology that's very coupled with Otter that I also wrote, which is called Jack. And I want to explain a little bit about the history of this and then sort of come back to answering the question.
Sure.
When we started working on Otter, one of the things that came up very early on, I mean, there were a number of Linux audio developers who were all puzzling over this whole issue, writing plugins. It's very common with these digital audio workstations to have potentially hundreds of plugins on your machine that all do some cool little feature. A little bit like the ones that exist for the GIMP, you know, that do some specific, you know, treatment of the audio in some way. Some of these plugins are immensely powerful. Some of them are almost trivial. But we had this huge problem that we already had people writing Linux audio software using a variety of graphical user interface toolkits. So people using Qt, people using GTK, people using FLTK, and so on. And at least at that point in time, it seemed essentially a completely insoluble problem how somebody could write a plugin for, let's say, a reverb unit or an echo unit or an EQ, and create a GUI for it and expect that GUI to run in any host application. Because the host application might have been written using Qt or GTK, and the plugin might have been written using FLTK, for example. So out of this dilemma, a bunch of us started talking about, you know, how, instead of thinking about plugins, how do we try to glue applications to together instead? There was no way on Linux at that time, and only one way on other platforms, for you to get audio out of one application and into another. And it seemed to a bunch of us that if you could do that, you would get rid of some of the need for a plugin architecture, because you could do things like drum machines as a standalone, you know, as a standalone program. And so Jack, which stands for the Jack Audio Connection Kit, was written with the goal of enabling you to write independent applications and have them all interconnect, so that the audio from one of them could be routed through the other one and then maybe come back to the first program or go off to a third program and so on. So what happens in the Otter world is that there is a very good drum machine, for example, that is called Hydrogen, which a lot of people have found, you know, extremely powerful, very easy to use, and capable of producing very good quality results. And it's just another application. And you can use Hydrogen by itself if you just want a drum machine. You can also plug its output into Otter and record it if that's what you need to do. You could plug its output into Otter and use Otter as an effects processor to give you more weird effects that Hydrogen doesn't do already. Or you could record it using some other program that uses Jack. There are other pieces of recording software on Linux that can use Jack as well. Maybe you don't want to use Otter. You want to use one of them. So Jack acts as this sort of generic interconnect, and then there's this, you know, ecology or, no, that's too ridiculous of a word. There's a collection of audio applications that do cool and interesting things that you can plug into each other with this. Hydrogen is the drum machine that most people I know use. There are a couple of others that are capable of being used like a drum machine. C24 springs to mind as one example, and there are several others. So Otter itself doesn't try to do that, but it's fully capable of being connected to these other applications that do. I hope that answer makes a certain kind of sense.
No, it does. It does. Yeah. I've actually played around with Hydrogen a few years ago. It's a really fascinating program.
Yeah, it's got a very nice user interface to it. The only thing it really needs is just a hell of a lot more drum samples. That's its biggest weakness, is that the existing set of drum kits you can get for it, it's not a pathetic collection. It's not, it really isn't that bad at all. But, you know, a good drum machine needs, I don't know, at least a couple dozen drum kits, really.
Uh-huh.
And I think Hydrogen is maybe only up to, you know, the reasonable quality ones, it may be, I'm not even sure it's reached a dozen yet. I think it might be more on the 6 or 8 range at this point.
Now, you had mentioned a little while ago about our door being able to sync with video playback. What exactly does that mean? And is there like some way to for our door to not? I don't think process video, but process the audio for the video, or how does that actually work?
Okay, let's do the first question. If you are working in a record in well, it depends what type of studio, a recording studio or what's called a post studio, which is what would be used at somewhere like Fox or Universal or a TV station. Generally, what will happen is they will have some type of a video playback hardware, and that video playback hardware will be controlled either by its own buttons or by some buttons on a generic box. There are a couple of companies that make controllers for these things that you sort of, you have one controller for the whole studio. And the idea is that when you press play, everything should start playing. And when you press rewind, everything goes back to the same place. And you hit play again and they're all in sync, right? In order to do that, you have to have some sort of protocol that the devices all use to talk to each other. And that's known generally as time code. You have a system where one of the machines, maybe the video playback engine, maybe the machine has the button on it, possibly ARDA, possibly some other digital audio workstation, functions as the master. And it will generate time code. If you're using video, it will actually read the time code off the frames of video and send the information out. Same thing for film. And then the idea is all the other machines are supposed to be slaves to that time code. If the time code says, we're jumping to this place, they're all supposed to jump there and play from that point. What generally happens with computers, not university, it generally happens with computers, is that that time code gets converted into a stream of MIDI data and is fed into the machine, into your digital audio workstation, and it gets the stream of MIDI data and, you know, it does the right thing, it jumps around and so on. And ARDA has supported MIDI time code for years and years now. That's what will be happening in a studio that is actually working with video production. If you're just sitting on your computer and you're working with video, the story is a little bit different. For itself doesn't really get very involved with, we don't really get involved in either video editing, or maybe I should say video content creation. We certainly don't get involved in sort of generic video playback in the way that MPlayer or Zine or any of those tools can do. One thing that we do that's still somewhat under development, I guess I shouldn't say we do it, is there's a very nice little tool called XJadio. And XJadio is a video player that understands Jack. And there is essentially the equivalent of time code inside of Jack. And so when you run XJadio, you can basically play a video in XJadio. And when you press start in ARDA, the video will start playing in XJadio. And when you jump around in the session inside of ARDA, then XJadio will jump to the right spot. And so typically the scenario where you do this is you've just shot your home video of your sister getting married, or the day that your cousin got crushed by an elephant or something, and you want to add a soundtrack to it. So you would have the video playing back in XJadio, and then you'd be working on the music in ARDA. When you're all done, you'd export the audio out of ARDA, and then you'd merge that using one of the many fine tools there are for merging audio and video on Linux. I say that a little bit sarcastically because, of course, the whole area is a giant mess. But, at the moment, we don't try to get involved in video content creation in a direct way. That may change. The same guy that wrote XJadio is working on trying to add video track to ARDA, and I don't actually think it's all that hard to do. So we will see how that turns out over the next several months.
Sounds like a lot of work.
Well, it is and it isn't. The reason I say it's not a lot of work is because most of the work's already been done. We were involved in a project. I was involved in a project, I guess, I don't know how many years ago it was now, 4 years ago probably, with the University of Glasgow in Scotland. And they had some EU funding to do some work on something called Animatics. I don't know if you've ever heard of this term. Animatics are used in the movie production industry, and what it means is not really very precisely defined, but it's somewhere between, it's sort of more than a storyboard, but less than the final movie. They were working on an interesting system to do that, and they wanted to hook up Arda to it so that you could have the this sort of semi-animated version of what the movie might be like, with Arda playing back the sound. And the person that did the work on that, a graduate student called Colin Moore, basically did image tracks inside of Arda. Their animatics engine would generate RGB images mm-hmm. of bits of the storyboard and would feed them into Arda, and Arda would line them up on a track, and, you know, you get synchronized playback between the whole thing. So we already have the code in there to have tracks to have images in them. It's really just a question of where the data comes from. And I think what Robin is thinking of doing is using the libraries from, there's a lot of options, I guess that the Zine libraries are one of the main things that we might use, to actually rip the frames out of video and then just stick them up in a track inside of Arda. You wouldn't actually get to edit them inside of Arda, but it would actually let you see the whole timeline of a video inside of Arda itself. I'm not saying I think it's a trivial piece of work by any means, but as I said, the work that Colin did has really laid the groundwork for that to take off. It's sad because the animatics project itself has just died completely. The people involved in it at Glasgow wanted it to be GPL, and business development office at the university said, "Oh, there has to be a way that we can make money from this," and they never figured out a way to make money from it. And the people doing the work just moved on to other things, and so nothing really ever came of it.
So, looking at Ardour and its availability, it of course is available for Linux, but it also is available for OS X. I don't notice mm-hmm. a Windows port there at all. Is there a reason for that?
Believe it or not, we have done a Windows port. It was done, Google paid for it as part of the Summer of Code last year. The port was not complete, but you could actually get Arda up on a Windows machine and have it record stuff. There were a couple of screenshots of having one of the Windows audio applications talking via Jack, because Jack has been ported to Windows. And so it does exist. It wasn't completely finished, but there was a good, you know, basic build system and a few sort of generic modifications that we had to make all the way through the code, take a compile on Windows and so on. The main reason we do not talk about that is because we think that releasing it will kill us, in essence. The yardstick that I keep in mind for this is there's a very nice piece of music typesetting software for Linux and OS X and now Windows that's called Lilypond, written by two fabulous guys out of the Netherlands. And, you know, they did a Linux version first, and then they did the usual thing of porting it to OS X, which wasn't very hard, and then they ported it to Windows, which was a little bit harder, but not too hard. And they got completely flooded in support requests. For every single Linux or an OS X user combined, there were at least 10 Windows users. And it was very hard for them because, you know, neither of them really used Windows. They didn't have any kind of support infrastructure that was filled with a lot of Windows knowledge. And we feel at the moment that we do not have any way to provide any kind of effective support if and when we ever release that version. We don't want our existing community to drown amidst a whole bunch of you know, Windows users who've got... And what the Lilypond guy said to me was that most of the support requests they had were to do with issues that had nothing to do with Lilypond, really. They were generic Windows issues. And, you know, we feel at the moment that it would be kind of unwise to put ourselves in a situation where we bring it out and people expect us to do some kind of a reasonable job of supporting it, and we just turn around and sort of say, well, we can't. We'd like to wait until we can turn around and sort of offer some method by which those people can get support, even if it's just providing a, you know, a good forum and a couple of experts, you know. I haven't thought about it too much. I don't really see Windows as a good platform for doing this sort of work on. I know people do use it for that, but it's just not something that personally interests me a great deal. But it may still happen.
Well, see, that's interesting because, I mean, you seem to be really, really focused on not only providing the application, but support, too. And I know it seems like a lot of other projects, the kind of attitude is, well, you know, if you want support, we'll give you what we can, but you're going to have to do the legwork yourself.
Well, the thing is that, you know, I think that's a great reply to the first person who shows up, right? And it's probably a pretty good reply for the first 10 people who show up. But if your IRC channel suddenly gets 150 new people in one day, who are all trying to make the Windows version work on their machine, it gets a little difficult to have that response to all of them. I mean, I know you can set up user buttons in XChat to just, you know, print a canned response. You're a Windows user, sorry, but we can't support you. It don't really become a very satisfactory way to do that long term. And, you know, until we have some, you know, to be honest, until we have some funding that's actually interested in creating a Windows version and thereby creating some expertise about issues with getting it working on Windows, you know, the sorts of issues people will face, so that we could at least even write a FAQ, for example. Until we have that, it's really, the honest truth is, we just don't have people in the community right now who really care enough to do that. You know, if somebody showed up next week and said, hey, you know, I know a lot about Windows, I'm a programmer, I know a lot about audio, I really want to get this stuff working, I'll do all the legwork, you guys don't really have to do anything, if you could just answer a few questions for me, then I'd probably say go for it. But, you know, the existing developer and, you know, testing community, I just can't see them doing it.
Well, speaking of that, are you, like, what type of a support or assistance are you looking for in Ardour? Or for the development right now? I mean, are you looking for more
money?
Lots of money.
Lots of money. I find it kind of ironic that I bring out a program that in the first 6 days of its 2.0 release, I get 15,000 downloads. And that doesn't include all the people who will be installing it via package managers, which we have no idea, you know, how many there are of them. And I still can't really figure out a way to actually make a living by doing this. So lots of money would be a nice start. After that, we just basically need more developers and more good documentation writers, in the same way that so many other open source projects do. There are just so many great ideas for features to add to the program. Some of them are actually really, you know, very simple and straightforward. Some of them are actually very complex, and there's probably only, you know, 3, 4, 5 people who would actually be able to do them. But, you know, there's a huge range of things like that, and that stuff isn't being done because the number of developers is relatively small. I mean, it's not one, but it's also not 100.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, more people to do that kind of work is great. We love it when new people show up from time to time that we've never even heard from previously, and they start sending us patches, and we're looking at it, and it's like, wow, they really get the whole code base, and they implemented some, you know, insanely complex feature that we wanted for a long time, and they just did it. That sort of thing happens, you know, 2 or 3 times a year, and it's great when it happens. The documentation side of it is another area that we could use so much help on. I mean, the existing manual, which I wrote a good part of, is just, let's be polite and say it's inadequate. And, you know, having somebody who is going to sit down and get to know the program, understands audio engineering, understands some of the terminology that people need, you know, will expect to read, and can sit down and write, you know, a really great manual for it, will be another thing to be of huge value to people. I mean, being able to point people at the manual and say the answer really is in here, and it's in this section, and you should just read it, would be a huge step up from the situation right now where, you know, we have to explain things to people over and over again because, you know, the answer just is not written down anywhere. So, you know, both of those areas, are things that will make a huge difference to the, you know, to the development of the program and its ease of use by actual users. I'm not sure we're very different in that respect from any other open source piece of software, to be honest. There's a few programs floating around that actually have great documentation already, but I think for the most part, most projects need both of those things.
You know, and that's one of the things that, you know, kind of I have a little bit of interest in, because I know I used to work in the education environment for a school district, and one of the things I see, and you know, kind of like looking at an application like Ardour, which would fit a lot of needs, and particularly in the education environment for training on this type of program, one of the things I see that holds back a lot of adoption of open, free and open source software is the fact that there isn't a lot of documentation, or in particular with schools, textbooks or training materials
yep.
on how to use that.
Exactly.
Do you see that as being something that, is that available for other types of applications similar to Ardour and the commercial side?
Well, it's certainly available for the proprietary applications. I mean, if you wander into your local Borders or Barnes & Noble or, you know, other large bookstore that has, you know, several shelves of computer text, you'll find down there in the same section that has stuff about Flash and Dreamweaver and the rest of them, there'll almost certainly be a set of books about Pro Tools and Sonar and what are the ones that they typically document, Cubase, there are typically books for, and so on. And they'll vary from books like that are essentially, you know, Cubase for dummies all the way up to, you know, Power Users Tips to Sonar 5.0. And, you know, that, I think, gives people a great sense of comfort when they can actually see that they can go and buy a book about something and sort of try to read about how to use it. As you just said, so many, you know, open source projects don't come with resources like that. And in fact, even the ones that have great documentation, I mean, I was just reading tonight, I mean, we use Subversion to manage our source code repository. And, you know, Subversion is a great piece of software. It has a great reference manual that I don't want to complain about in any way. I think there's possibly even an O'Reilly book about it, which would actually answer the whole point I was just about to make. But, you know, even though it has a great reference manual easily available online, there are still times when, you know, you almost feel like, gee, it would be really nice to read something about this program that just assumes that I'm trying to figure stuff out instead of reading a reference manual. And as I said, it's not a very fair criticism, because in fact I think that the subversion manual really is pretty exemplary. But there are certainly plenty of other pieces of software that have, you know, stuff like that, and it doesn't answer the same kinds of needs as those books. I don't know how you get them written. I mean, I don't know about you. All the tech writers I've met, you know, it's a pretty specialized skill.
Right.
You know, to be able to write good technical documentation that somebody that doesn't understand the software will still be able to understand the documentation. I'd like to believe that I can do it, but I think I might be fooling myself, you know. I'm a coder, and I can sit and spend hours explaining to someone in IRC, and I could spend, you know, hours in person, but that's very different than sitting down and writing clear, easily understandable, well cross-referenced, well-indexed books. I'm not really sure how we get around that problem until there's just more money available, really.
True. So we need to get more technical writers in the community.
Yeah, and that's hard, since those people, I don't know, I mean, I also think it's one of those, well, maybe it's a task that can be done a bit like programming. I mean, there are a lot of open source programmers who work on their open source projects around the margins of their lives. I mean, I've been fortunate in, you know, for a long time with Ardour, in various different ways, I've been able to work on it full time. But I'm wondering if you can get technical writers to do that kind of work, you know, in the evening or in the morning or on the weekends. I'm not sure.
Sounds like leave that up to some of our listeners to pitch in their assistance.
Right.
Because we have somebody on our IRC, JZA, who is been vocal about that and saying, you know, hey, this is an application that could really benefit from some video tutorials or, and I'm sure it could if somebody would actually do it.
That's right. That's right. I mean, it's a weird situation when, you know, most of the complaints that people make about your software are things that you're ready to completely aware of, but you also know that you really can't address any of the complaints because you just don't have the resources to bring to bear on it. I mean, the companies that produce proprietary digital audio workstations, for example, are not huge software companies, but they have, I don't know, the only example I actually have numbers for right now is that Ableton, who are based in Berlin, they produce a piece of software called Live, which is not quite in the same area of functionality as Ardor, but it's not that different. I mean, it's a multi-track system that you can do recording on, editing, and mixing. It's just a little more focused on the idea of actually being used during live musical performance. They've been extremely successful. They've hit a sort of a interesting zeitgeist in the sense that looping music, music based on looping technology, has become very popular in the last 10 to 15 years, and their stuff is very good at doing that. They currently employ nearly 100 people, and they're based on, you know, essentially around one single product. They have a couple of side projects on it. They have 100 people in there who are writing documentation, who are doing design, who are doing marketing, who are doing code development, who are doing QA, who are doing, you know, all kinds of stuff. And it gives you an idea of the scale of what you need to actually put out a product like this that will have the kind of success that Ableton Live has had, which is really, you know, is pretty substantial. The idea that we can get stuff out at the same level, at the same rate as those guys, when we're essentially a volunteer community, I think is a bit naive, and it's difficult to explain to people sometimes that as much as we'd love to do great video tutorials, as much as we'd love to add this feature and that feature and have a really good manual, you know, the resources right now are not there to do it. And they're not there to do it in part because nobody's paying for the software, which on the one hand is fine, and on the other hand, it limits what we can do. So, and again, obviously we're not the only Linux piece, the only piece of Linux or open source software that has this problem. I mean, that's a dilemma that I think we all face. I mean, if there was more income, there'd be more resources available, more people, more ways to actually do these things that people would like us to do.
No, you know, you do what you can do. And,
yeah,
you know, you can't deny the fact that you put out one hell of an application, you know.
Well, I can try.
Well, I mean, yeah, a lot of places you can say the documentation might not be as great as you want it to be, but, you know, on the flip side, you hit the nail on the head when you're saying you're a programmer. And,
right,
you know, as great as you might want to be, you don't think of yourself as a professional writer, and it's really hard to to do that kind of part of the project, and that's where, you know, we need more support from,
right,
you know, the community, and you can only do so much.
That's right. And it's weird. I mean, for a while it's weird sometimes how the little technical details, you know, things appear to come down to little technical details. I mean, we had the manual up as a wiki for a while, but because of wiki spam, we had it you had to register in order to work on it. And, you know, as a result, we got very, very few people doing any kind of contribution to it whatsoever. I know you can deal with wiki spam in the same way that, say, Wikipedia has dealt with it in various ways, but they deal with it by being a fairly big organization. We didn't feel we were in a position to do that. And so in the end, when we got no feedback, no real effective updating process going on for the wiki, for the user community, but we decided actually the way it looked was more important than it being a wiki.
Uh-huh.
And so now we've pulled that, and although in theory people can submit patches because the manual is now in the source code repository, the stuff that's available online is non-editable. And, you know, lots of people said, well, wouldn't it be better to be back in a wiki? And it's like, well, we tried it as a wiki, and whatever the reasons were, we didn't really get very much input. So it's definitely, you know, a tricky area, and you're right, but we just need more people to sort of step up and, you know, say, hey, I can do this. I have experience in it, I know how to do it, and I'm prepared to put the time in.
Well, it's one heck of a job. So when you're not working on Ardour, what are you doing?
I work on Ardour all the time.
Oh, well.
It's basically a, you know, well, not basically. I mean, it is a full-time job for me. So, and it has evolved that way over a number of years.
So then, is this your day-to-day job then? You know, do you...
Yeah.
So
I wake up in the morning and I go hack on Ardour. And after I'm done hacking on Ardour, I go to bed. There are other things I do in life too. But, you know, at least as far as work, that's what I do. I was lucky in the beginning. The first 5 years of it was being funded basically through the money that I made helping to start Amazon.com. I was a second employee there, and I didn't stay there around very long, but I did make enough cash. I didn't need to work for a while.
Uh-huh.
So that was the case for the first 5 years, and then I actually stopped working on Ardour full-time and took a job doing some unrelated programming work for a year. And sort of, I kept Ardour. I think I worked for that company three-quarter time and tried to sort of put 25% time into Ardour, which was very stressful. And then Solid State Logic showed up and said, hey, you know, we've been watching what you've been doing. We'd really like you to, you know, to get back to doing this full-time, and we'll pay you for it. I was like, yes, you know, this is really great. I can wake up in the morning and do what I used to do for free, and now I get paid. Unfortunately, that ran out in January, and although, as I said, there's a number of smaller deals that I'm, you know, worked out or being worked out with some companies now, there's nothing that really is at the level that Solid State was offering. I'm vaguely optimistic that the Ardour subscription system might, in the long run, pan out to something that can provide a reasonable level of income. As I said, you know, when we get 15,000 downloads in 6 days, it sort of seems like if you could just turn a few of those people into people that actually paid you $10 a month,
mm-hmm.
or made a one-time donation, that you could actually get up to a reasonable level. But as yet, that hasn't happened. I mean, we have about maybe 80 subscribers right now.
Right.
And although in Sri Lanka, that might be enough for me to work on Ardour quite comfortably in the eastern seaboard of the United States with three kids, it's not.
I can understand that.
Yeah.
So
I don't know what happens with that long term. I mean, I have thought recently to actually doing open source in the U.S., unless you're young and single and you can live in a state that has, you know, essentially no income tax and very low property tax, the whole thing just doesn't really make that much sense. There's places that you could go live elsewhere that arguably are actually nicer places to live with a massively lower cost of living. And certainly, you know, with the subscriptions I get right now, throwing a few Google ads here and there, some donations, you know, some one-off bits of contract work, I think that there's a lot of places in the world where you could do this and actually live quite comfortably. The United States doesn't seem to be one of them. And there are times when I do find myself wondering, why am I trying to do this here?
Did you grow up in Philadelphia?
Sorry, what was your question?
Oh, yeah. Are you originally from the Philadelphia area?
No, I'm not. I actually grew up in London.
Oh, okay.
I've been in the States for 18 or 19 years now.
Okay.
And I lived in Seattle for 7 years, and I've been here for the rest of that time.
Now, are you actually in Philadelphia itself, or are you on a...
Technically, I'm just outside of it. My house is about 3 blocks from City Line Avenue.
Okay.
So I'm actually in Bala Cynwyd, right outside of it, but because of the odd shape of Philadelphia, we're actually closer to downtown than most of Philadelphia is. So,
okay.
You know, I can be in Chinatown in 13 minutes in my car from here.
Huh.
Well, I'm probably parked as well. So it's a reasonably nice place to be.
Yeah, because that was originally from Lehigh Valley area there,
right,
Bethlehem.
And you're still based out there, right, or not?
Well, I'm in Virginia. I'm down in Yorktown, okay. Virginia right now. And Alan and Pat live up in Easton. Link has just moved. He just got a job at Thomas Jefferson University. So I'm not exactly sure where he's got an apartment yet, but he's kind of down near your area.
I think he's in like Downingtown or something.
He's in Downingtown.
I think that's where, that's where he said it was.
Right. I wonder where he's working for Thomas Jefferson, because they've got, theoretically, they have bits and pieces all over the Delaware Valley.
I thought he was at the main campus. That's in Philadelphia, isn't it?
That's right in Philadelphia, yeah. It's quite a commute in from Downingtown.
Maybe he's not in Downingtown, Alan.
Yeah.
I thought that's where it was, but I could be wrong. I'm not totally sure where. I have to look it up on his blog.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say that I'm much more of a West Coast person myself. The period I was out in Seattle was really a fantastic time from my perspective, and every time I go back out west, I find myself thinking, why don't I just move out here? But, you know, after you've been in a place for a while, especially when you've got kids, you form a whole bunch of connections to people and things there, and it's not so trivial to move. I mean, I had the big benefit that with the work I do on order, you know, I could, as long as I can get a reasonably high-speed internet connection, I can go work anywhere.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I'm not sure that my kids would necessarily appreciate being told that we're just packing up and leaving. The West Coast just has a different feeling to it that I think I prefer. People are more, they live outdoors more. I think there's more people who are less career focused than I think is generally the case on the East Coast. And in some places they have much nicer weather too.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we're in that one of those two parts of the year right now out here where it's just fabulous to be here. I mean, you know, I presume that the weather, well, I guess in Virginia, I don't know what it's like down there, but Philadelphia, the last several days has just been totally fantastic. It'll last for about 3 weeks, and then we get summer.
Yeah. And how is the cost of living compared, you know, to Philadelphia compared to out west? On the West Coast?
I think it varies depending exactly what you look at and where you look, right? I mean, you know, San Francisco, the real estate's insane. You know, you could move from, I mean, I have friends out in Silicon Valley who live in essentially blown up ranch houses, you know, expanded ranch houses that they could sell and move out and buy a small estate here. But if you look, on the other hand, at places in Oregon, parts of Washington State and so forth, you know, there's actually still some reasonably cheap places to live. And everything else, I think, you know, it's the USA. Things are about the same price wherever you go, right? I mean, gas varies a little bit, but I think most things there are about the same. I think you do tend to drive longer distances a little bit more out there. That may be changing as the price of gas has gone up, but... Yeah, it's just a slightly different mindset out there. I think part of it is just caused by the landscape. Some of it is from the climate. Some of it is just the whole out west thing. You know, it's been a kind of a legend in the American psyche for a couple of centuries now of heading out west. It has this kind of mythic status to it. Anyway, I mean, you know, this is a reasonable place to live right now and to raise kids and so forth. And from the perspectives of the people who use order, it makes no difference at all.
True. As long as the source code's there, huh?
As long as the source code's there. And the source code is actually on a machine in... I'm trying to think where... I don't even know where my web provider is located. I'm not sure they would even necessarily know which of their machines has that source code on it, right? So it's a strange world.
True. That it is. Alan, do you have any questions?
No, I'm good, actually. Like I said, it looks like a really neat program. I wish I had something I could actually run it on and play with, but unfortunately, I'm going to have to go over the pat.
What makes you think you don't have anything you can run it on?
Well, no, I should say I do. I just don't have anything really to do with it. That's
all right.
That, it's yeah. more along the lines, like, the last time I played an instrument, I think I was still in high school, so.
Yeah.
That was a long time ago.
It's never too late to start again.
Well, that's true. I do still have the guitar here, but.
Yeah.
I'd have to start learning from the beginning again, because I can't remember anything on it.
Right.
Well, now, Pat is running it.
Yeah. Do you know what he does with it?
Well, he was for a time. For a time, he was trying to record the show for us. We were going to do like a multi-track recording so we could get all the levels equal on it. I don't know exactly what he's doing with it right now because he just had a baby, so you know,
okay.
he's going to be busy for quite a while. So he may not be doing anything with it for a while, but
right. Well, as I said, you know, we certainly the people working on it. You know, are not of the opinion that we've created the one and only recording tool. You know, there are quite a lot of things where, you know, its functionality is just massive overkill, you know, for what people really need.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if you look at some nice little simple programs, like there's a GNOME program, I can't even remember what it's called now, but, it, you know, it just has this incredibly simple, straightforward interface where you can just record an audio file. And, you know, for a lot of purposes, that's just what you need. You know, this tool was written originally. I mean, I have to say that the one part of the story I didn't really describe here was that, you know, I had a friend of mine in Philadelphia who has a recording studio. And I don't know why I sort of got this idea in my head, but I thought it'd be fun to try to write a recording tool that not only I could use, but that could potentially replace some of the equipment he was already using. And, you know, at that time, he was using three, what are they called, ADAT digital tape recorders. And, you know, that was actually very relatively easy to do. I think I got that working in probably, you know, a few months. Looking back, and I don't know how buggy it really was, but it looked like you could actually do, you know, a 24-track recording on a what by modern standards is a completely ancient machine. But, you know, right from the beginning, there was definitely a focus on the sort of professional audio side of things. This wasn't being written with the goal of, you know, J random Linux user who just wants to record some kind of audio. It was always focused on the needs of professional users. And it was very useful, you know, the association with his studio, because I would just sort of go over there and hang out and watch what actually happens when he's working and think about, well, you know, what are the sorts of things that he really needs to actually get his job done. This is nothing new. I mean, you know, DigiDesign has done this for years, which is why their program works as well as it does. They picked up lots of feedback about what those professionals need, and they've merged it into their program. But, you know, I think we do get complaints from people, you know, much like one of the first questions you asked. It just seems so complicated. How do I do anything with this? And part of the answer is, well, you know, the honest truth is we weren't really aiming it at you. there has been talk of producing a different version of it that would have a much simpler interface. And actually one of the things I'm doing for SAE this summer is to produce a version for their students that may not be as simple as some of the very new users on Linux would want, but it will actually strip away a lot of the complexity. We'll get rid of lots of options in the user interface. We'll get rid of you know, a lot of capabilities that somebody who's just starting out understanding how to do this stuff just doesn't need to know about. And that version will be available to anyone to use as well. So how far that will go to addressing some of the complexity problems will be interesting to see.
Now, what licenses are DOOR developed under?
It's all under the GPL.
Under the GPL. And now, mm-hmm. what distribution do you use over there for development?
I use Fedora. The other main developers right now are on a big mix. There's a couple of people on Ubuntu, a couple of people on Gentoo. A couple of our core developers actually don't really do much work on Linux at all. They do their work on OS X. And I would say, I mean, we don't have much among the developer population. I don't think that SUSE or straightforward Debian have much representation. But pretty much everything else shows up in one way or another. I started using Fedora mostly because of the work that's been done at Stanford University's Karma Center to produce a pro audio media overlay for Fedora. And when I switched to it, I had just gotten sick and tired of spending so much time myself compiling cool new bits of audio software, rebuilding my kernel, stuff that I just didn't really have time to do. I wanted to work on Arda. And Fernando Lopez Lescano, who works at Karma, had produced this wonderful system that took advantage of package management as we know it, but put a focus entirely on the audio and media side of things. And it was just great. I don't use it so much at this point in time because I've just been through several revisions of machines. I'm at the point now where the machine I'm working on, I don't actually want all of those different applications on. And in addition, lots of the things that Fernando was one of the first people to package, now they're just in the Yum repositories for Fedora, and you can just pick them up as if they were regular libraries. But they are regular libraries now. But the work he did was really outstanding, and it saved me from a lot of these mundane tasks that really had nothing to do with moving my software forward, but were entirely to do with sort of system administration stuff. And there's a similar system about to come out for Ubuntu called Ubuntu Studio as well that will have much the same relationship. I'm not sure if it's exactly the same relationship. I think Ubuntu Studio might just be a different version of Ubuntu. It won't be an overlay that you put on top of Ubuntu. I think it's an alternate version.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's got much the same idea that it's totally focused on the needs of people who want to make music, video, media stuff on a Linux machine. And it tries to do a lot of the legwork for them because there is a lot of legwork. To get your machine set up to do this is quite complex.
That's interesting stuff.
Yeah.
Paul, I want to thank you for coming on and talking about Ardour.
Thank you for the invite.
Anytime. And you're more than welcome to stay on as long as you want if you got things to do.
I have a source code merge that I have to finish.
Oh, okay.
Actually.
Well, you go do that because we don't want to tick off the users there.
I'm going to jump right back to it. Thank you very much for the invite to be on the show, and keep up the good work, guys.
Oh, thank you very much, and maybe we can touch base with you again in the future.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot.
Good night.
Good night. You take it easy.
Good night.
Bye. There we go. Paul Davis, developer of Ardour.
Cool.
That's some good stuff. That's one of those kind of applications that I wish I had more use for, Because it's really
cool. That's the whole thing. I really don't. The only recording I do is I run a recording now because in case something goes wrong on your end, we at least have something back on the background here
that
we can fall back onto. But I really don't do any other recording.
Yeah. And then there's Pat who spent all that time getting it working.
Well, he has the four channel sound card and everything. So I guess he can utilize it a whole lot better than I think either one of us could. And plus, unfortunately, I don't create music anymore. I never really did, but
Hold on a second. I'll be right back, Alan. You keep talking.
Keep talking. But anyways, who keep talking to what? Let's see. I have absolutely nothing to say, to be very honest with you. I haven't done anything in Linux besides read email, which is really sad when you come to think about it. I have a nice machine and I don't do jack with it. Perhaps I should. But I don't.
Tell me you just weren't in silence that whole time.
No, I just took a drink.
Wow.
It's actually hard to talk about nothing when there's no one else here.
Yeah, I know.
Don't go away, man. Don't go away.
Sorry. I do have a couple of things I can talk about tonight.
You did have some topics earlier when we first started off.
I did?
Well, Pat was giving you topics if you bothered to pay attention.
Oh, yeah, he wanted me to mention the Tux 500 again over there at, what is that, tux500.org?
Yeah, I think that's the right address for it.
You're supposed to be fact-checking everything I say. No, it's not Tux500.
Excuse me, I'll jump over to that page and do something there.
What is it? Tux? That's tux500.com.
.com. Okay.
Yeah, there we go. They're at $11,000. Tux500.com to get a NASCAR
it's
sponsorship.
IndyCar.
Sorry, IndyCar. IndyCar sponsorship.
I think it is an IndyCar, yeah.
Yes. And
get a logo on an IndyCar.
Yes, and the more money they raise, the bigger the logo.
It'll just be a blur, but you can, hey,
it's the thought that counts.
Well, I know, but you can get shirts and keychains and shit.
Right. Cool. Nifty stuff. Something to check out. Tux500.com. All right, so last night, I've been neglectful of my main workstation since I've gotten my laptop, and I don't use it as much, except on show nights, of course, where I do the recording from it, and that's where my main IRC sessions are always open and screen. I just don't use it as much as now that I have my wonderful System 76 machine. So it's been a while since I actually did an Arch update on it, and I said, you know, I've been pushing it off and pushing off, and it's been actually a couple of months.
This is on your desktop, right?
Yeah, this is on my main workstation, yeah. And I said, okay, I'm going to get right down to it and upgrade to the latest and greatest. And I sat down there, and I forgot how to use Pac-Man. I've been so used to using apt-get, and I forgot how to use Pac-Man at first. I'm like, okay, Pac-Man / upgrade, or --, upgrade, and I'm like, why isn't it working? And I'm reading the man page, and I'm like, damn, I can't. And then it hit me. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. I got to do --SYU to sync the repositories to start off the upgrade process and everything. And I'd like to say it was a smooth process, but I did have some problems. First off, one of the repositories I had, the Danamoth repository, couldn't find it anymore. And that was holding up some of the upgrading process, and it's such a pain in the butt. Then I had issues with the barrel and compiz packages on there, and the libwcnk package that, you know, I wanted to upgrade it, and then it's come back complaining about conflicts with libwcnk. And every time I'd run the update for this, it would take a few minutes to sync everything and to process everything and to get up, you know, saying what it actually had to do. So I finally got it, you know, kicked off last night around 12:45. That what I had to do was remove the compiz and barrel packages, and then I manually upgraded end curses. I don't know why it was complaining about that, but I just manually upgraded. So finally, it kicked off. It downloaded 1.7 gigs worth of packages to update, and it was still, you know. It bombed out. I can't remember exactly what it bombed out. Maybe it was a libn curses this morning. So I started that whole process again and went off to work. And, of course, then I saw the lovely post in our forum that apparently the Arch distribution developers and stuff are... There's some kind of big explosion going on over there where people are jumping ship and moving back over to FreeBSD. And I'm not fully in the loop as to what the heck's going on. And... So, you know, I was a little concerned that when I got home today, I'd be in for a surprise that things would be problematic. And, you know, lo and behold, there were absolutely no problems whatsoever. I ran Lilo, rebooted my machine, and up came version 0.8 of Arch.
Out came the smoke.
and it was working perfectly. It's got a new version of XFCE in here. Let me see what... XFCE version 4.4.1.
Excuse me.
And I'm not sure. It's significantly different looking. I will say that. All of a sudden now I have icons on my desktop. And I'm not accustomed to having icons on my desktop. I don't know why I have icons on my desktop. But it must be a new feature in XFCE. One I wasn't really expecting. I don't know how I feel about it right now. Usually I like to have a clean desktop, but that's the way it goes, I guess. I had noticed I had to reconfigure a lot of my settings on here, too. For instance, the virtual desktops, which I always have to wrap around the first to the last desktop and last to the first desktop when I'm using the mouse wheel, that was set back to its default. The actual configuration for it, the settings, I noticed that they have the defaults, and then you can't really change the defaults, but you can make a customized settings. You name, a different set of settings. I just called mine Dan, and allows you to customize it. I usually map Alt space to whatever run application I prefer, run dialog application I prefer, and in this case it's the XFC one. Of course, that was mapped to something different, so I had to reset that, which was, again, not as intuitive as I would like it to be, because you go in under the settings, you can click on the settings manager. If you right-click on the desktop, you get the menu, the XFC menu. There's a settings menu also down there on the little XFCE launcher panel. There's a menu that you panel that you can pull up, and you can look at different settings. So, of course, first thing I did was I'm looking for keyboard, so I figured keyboard shortcuts would be under keyboard, and they are, and there's a handful of them on there. And, of course, XFCE run is listed right in there. And I clicked on it and set it to Alt Space, but I could not find what the other thing was set for, what other hotkey was being used or service was being used by Alt Space. So that's when I started looking around and saying, well, it looks to be some kind of either desktop or window manager tweak. So I went down to the window manager button, and I started looking there. And, of course, there's another tab in there called keyboard. And there's about four or five times the number of keyboard shortcuts in that manager as compared to the keyboard, which at first I didn't think was kind of evident. But I finally found what was using the Alt space so that I can remap that to something different. And that was originally the Windows operation menu was being used by Alt space. So now I just switched that to Control Alt space because I didn't want it mapped that way. But I noticed that some of these other menus where you would find keyboard shortcuts there, it's not an exhaustive list. And you get keyboard shortcuts under things like Window Manager, and I think that's the only two places. I don't know why they have it separated in two separate locations. In some ways, I can see it making sense, but I prefer all my keyboard shortcuts in one menu. It makes it easier for me to configure everything instead of having to bounce around between two different ones. But that's just my nitpicky self.
You're such a pain in the butt.
I have some demands, you know. I'm a little picky.
Your quirks.
Yes, I have preferences. I noticed that the new version of XFCE is a little just a little pokier than the older version. Not too noticeably pokier, but it has a. This is going to come off and sound really, really, you know, degrading towards it. But I guess if the, to me, XFCE in the past was very clean, very low footprint. The theme of it was not intrusive. It was Spartan, but it was something that I preferred. And this new one, this new theme on it, seems a little too, what's the word I'm looking for? A little too rounded, a little too pastel-y, a little too bold for my preferences. And like I said, I've only been running it since.
Is that just a theme setting, though?
I'm not sure. Let me see. Let me bring up the settings manager again. I'm not sure if it's just the theme or what, window manager style. Blackwall, Biz, Beastie. It's possible it could just be the theme. I don't know. Like I said, this is the first time I've used it tonight, and it's taken a little bit of getting used to. Not the same. Maybe somebody complaining in the IRC about my lack of knowledge on the new XFCE. But I'd have to dig around on these and see. It was set to God, now I can't remember what was the original theme it was set to when I first fired it up. I don't know.
I haven't used XFCE, and I can't remember the last time I did use it. I've always been, KDE has always been very comfortable for me, so that's what I've always stuck to.
Yeah. I don't see much of a difference in a lot of these when I click on them. Their themes, Cold Steel, I don't know, Crux.
It's usually like only like a button or something changes.
Yeah. Aqua. Agua Lamon. I don't know. Agua. Default. I'll stick with the, I don't know. I'm not going to dick around with it. Chances are I'll do something and it'll crash it, and then I'll lose the audio. It's a risk you take with, you know, updating everything. Although, Audacity, the new version of Audacity that came with it, 1.3.2 beta, I'm not sure how new that is. Looks a little different than, the interface looks a little different than I recall it. But,
I don't even know what one I'm using here. I got 1.2.4 as well. Which to me looks the same as all the other versions ever really did. For the one thing I use it for.
Yeah. There's the version 2.0 of Thunderbird, which seems pretty slick. Actually, do they call it Thunderbird in here?
XFCE Thunderbird.
No, it's version 2.0. I thought I was listening to Lug Radio and they said something about there being a calendaring software included with a new version of Thunderbird. Maybe that's the beta one. I don't know.
I don't know, man. I think you rubbed off on them from the last show I heard with all their references to Meat Spin and all those shit.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm trying to get away from that.
you rubbed off on them.
Well, they can have it all. I'm done with that stuff. I'm done with Meat Spin. I haven't been to any of those sites in such a long time. I don't plan on going. Yes, I'm done with that. Meat Spin ruined my life.
That means we got to get the music on the MySpace page changed.
Well, you can keep it. I don't care. you know what else I tried this week? I tried. Let me see. What did I try? I want to get the name of this right because it's a really significant application. It's a game. Was it Beyond the Red Line?
Also, the one Pat was talking about 2 weeks ago or so, wasn't it?
Yeah, Beyond the Red Line, which is a they've taken the Free Space engine and created a whole Battlestar Galactica game/story around it. And it is... my first impression of it was I was very, very, very pleased and amazed. Who just popped in?
The one and only.
Aha, there he is.
Ooh, all right.
Hold on a second. Okay. Let me finish my spiel here on Beyond the Red Line. It's only going to take me a minute. Really cool application. Professionally done. I know people have complained about the voices in there, but I thought, you know, they were really good and spot on, and I really liked it. My only problem with it was I can't really play it on a laptop because it requires the use of a number pad for a lot of controls. And if you have a laptop, you don't get a separate number pad, so you got to turn on like number lock to be able to use it, and it makes using some of the other controls almost impossible. So I'm going to have to try it on my main workstation.
Can you use it with like a joystick?
Yeah, you can use it with a joystick, but I don't have a joystick. So I only got like into the tutorial, and it was I remember playing, you know, some of the same way with Free Space, but it was really two thumbs up. Fantastic job that they did.
Well, I see you can get it for the Mac as well.
Yeah, it's for Windows OS 10 and most importantly Linux.
Cross platform there.
Yeah, it's really good. Really good. It's like a 325 meg download. Installed and ran without a problem. It was really easy, and I just fired it off on Feisty. I'm going to try it out on Arch hopefully this weekend or something. I don't know. But anyway, more important, more to the point, Link is here, and he can fill us in on his exciting news.
Oh, my exciting life, right?
And where are you now?
I am in Downingtown, Pennsylvania.
How far are you from where you work? I mean, how long is the commute?
It's about an hour. Hour and 20 minutes, depending on which train station I go to.
Uh-huh. Oh, so you're taking the train,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah, it's been quite the whirlwind thing, man. I signed a lease last Friday. I moved the next day because I had to start orientation at Thomas Jefferson University in Philly on Monday. So orientation on Monday, my second full day of work was today. And I'm just hanging out at my new place, you know, with my sleeping bag and a cot from Walmart and a tub of peanut butter. And that's about it, man.
That sounds like really kinky, too.
It gets lonely, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, man. I'll tell you.
I know, man. I've been there.
It's quite the deal. No internet access, of course, so that's why I'm not on the show tonight. But I figured I would, use up a few of my spare cell phone minutes and call in and just say hello to everybody.
Well, it's good you did. I'm glad to hear things are working out for you there. Yeah, you liking your job?
Well, I haven't done very much of it yet, but yeah. You know, Thomas Jefferson University is the biggest medical college in the United States. One of the oldest. It's just a giant place with, 1,200 employees and as much as you would think Philly would be sort of New Yorkish, where the people are kind of, standoffish and things like that. They're really not. Everybody down here has been really, really nice and helpful and supportive. And, the other staff members at the university are really, really cool. And one of the reasons that I really wanted to take this job, other than the fact that they wanted to pay me like real money, is the fact that I got a buddy that works in the same department, and all he had to say was, glowing things about the department head, the boss. And you know what? No, you never go anywhere where somebody tells you the boss is cool, right? Well, the boss really is cool here, so it's pretty nice to go somewhere where you get paid and you get to do interesting thing with interesting people, and the boss is a geek and pretty cool too. I just wish I had a little internet access at home. That's all.
So when's that
comes
show
tomorrow?
Oh, cool.
That comes tomorrow. Comcast cable, folks. I'm getting 16 megs down and one up.
There you go.
No servers though. So here's your notice. Like link.homeunix.org will be getting shut off sometime towards the end of the month. And it's going to get rolled over to a new, probably a WordPress weblog on linkgeek.org.
There we go. Now, is your daughter and your wife, are they going to stay up there for her to finish out the school year up there?
Yeah.
Okay.
They'll be there. They'll be there through the 7th of next month.
Uh huh.
Up where we, where I used to live in eastern Pennsylvania. And I will be returning on weekends to, piecemeal move things each weekend between now and then.
Yeah. It's a long. It's gonna be an adjustment there, man. I tell you, I know what it's like. I've been there.
It's something, man.
It's exciting now.
It is exciting, and I really like the new neighborhood I moved into as well. You know, like I said, the people around Philly are a lot nicer than I had anticipated, which is kind of weird. You know, it almost reminds me, when I moved out here, first of all, I don't know if any of you guys out there listening besides Dan and Alan will know this, but if you've ever been out to Lancaster, Pennsylvania, what you get is like you get these giant manicured fields on each side of the road, okay, and there's like nice looking older buildings and things that are well kept in between, and dotted in amongst them you have these little towns and cities and stuff like that. And out here by Downingtown, I get the same sort of feel as I do in Lancaster. As you're driving along the highways, it has the same kind of look and the same kind of feel. And when I got out to Downingtown, like, my apartment is really, my apartment complex, not really complex, is only 16 units, but it's very, very quiet, right? And there's no garbage anywhere, you know, like there's no trash on the sidewalk, there's no trash in the parking lot. There's a little creek that runs along the back of the parking lot. It's just really, you know, it's quiet and quaint, and the neighbors are all wickedly cool around here. It's different. It's sort of like, you see those old movies where people were like captured and transplanted into these, like Russian, you know, Russian institutions where all of a sudden everything is like, they put these American people in with all these people from the 50s and some, like, you know, test city where they're trying to train up these Russian people how to act like, you know, Americans or something like that. It's just really weird. It's almost like an episode of The Twilight Zone. It takes some real getting used to, you know.
I hear you. That's cool. That is cool. Do you have a light in your apartment?
I had to go out and buy one.
So you got like a bed?
I came here. Yeah, when I came here, I had, you know, I have a little car. I have a Saturn Ion, right? So everything that I have here with me now fit in my car one trip into a Saturn Ion. The only things that I bought when I got here, I bought some glasses. I bought a cot from Walmart because my inflatable bed that I brought with me died the first night. Blew it up. Went to sleep on it, woke up the next morning, like 4 o'clock in the morning, in a puddle, an air puddle, you know? So I had to go buy a cot. Plus, you know, like, I'm getting old, and it's just easier to get up from a cot than it is from the floor, you know? But, so, you know, I went and bought a cot, some cups, and a few odds and ends, but really that's it. Everything else, you know, came with me in the car ride. So you can imagine that it's pretty sparse in there right now in the apartment. And my little wrestling table desk, fold-away desk, and a padded folding chair. And my laptop running Ubuntu, and my Mac Mini. And that's it.
Just the important stuff.
Yeah. But the computers really don't do me any a damn bit of good because I have no internet access. I mean, I did a couple of times. There was an open wireless connection, but it's so awfully spotty that it's not even, you know, and I got out on it a couple times to send like one or two emails and that's it. And it's so annoying to do that. You know, reconnect and reconnect and reconnect. It's not even worth it. I'll just wait till by the time I get home tomorrow, I'll have a nice internet connection. I should anyway. And then I can start participating more in the forums and the emails and things like that again. I know Dan's sad and misses me.
We all miss you.
From the forum posts and stuff. I know Alan doesn't miss me from there because Alan doesn't read them, you know.
Which post? The forum? Yeah. I read the forum every day. I just don't post in the forum. I think I have like 18 posts in like 3 years. But I do read it every day. I just have nothing to say.
And that's the way it goes.
It is.
That's the way it always goes.
So yeah, they're poor, taking money donations. Go ahead, send them to me. Happily take them.
Man. Living the life, man. Living the life.
Yeah, living that bachelor life. That's scary life to live, man, when you're, you know, transplanted out in the middle of nowhere. You don't know anybody. You're sleeping on a cot. You got $5 to live on for the next month.
Well, I hear you.
It's not true, though. I don't have $5 to live on for the next month. I have $5 to live on for the next 2 weeks. And then after I pay my bills, I only have $5 left for the rest of the week.
That'll all change soon.
Yeah, eventually I'm like, $12.
Once all them big bucks start rolling in.
What's that?
Once all those big bucks start rolling in.
Yeah, it'll be a while. The big bucks got to pay off the big bills from moving, you know, because it's really stupid way to do things, but it's the only way I could do it. You know, I have to rent two apartments for this month anyway, because, you know, I have to live here to go to work, and my kid is finishing out school, so I have to rent that apartment out so she can finish her school out. So there's, you know, 4 months rent from my old apartment, you know, 1 month there and 3 months worth of that for the rent here, plus, you know, 2 months worth of security deposit, which is like $1,800 here, you know, $1,900 here. So that just tapped me, you know, and tapped my no money that I had to begin with. But Alan was so generous.
You got that check, didn't you? All right.
Yeah. Sure. Just don't tell your motorcycle just yet.
Yeah. Well, no, the other one's waiting for you now. Now that you're making the big bucks, you know, I'll hold on to it for a little while longer. I'll make you a deal you cannot refuse.
Cool. I gotta I'll come up there with a $10 bill, nice and crisp, brand new.
Well, it's gonna be a little more than $10, but
all right, a $20 bill.
since I'm not exactly breaking my back to get it on the market, I really should, but it's down at my parents' house now, and I really just don't feel like going down and visiting my parents.
Get
it all cleaned up, and then I got to borrow the truck to bring it back home. I figure it's easier to sell it up here than it is to sell it down at their house. Even though I'd get more money down at their house, it would mean that I would have to like stop there after work on a regular basis.
Right. But that's
gonna
pretty
go
much
this summer.
The life of Link, you know.
That's awesome.
Link's life.
Real exciting. I have one magazine, my Linux magazine. I've read it like 57 times already. Yep. Did I mention I really don't get cable until tomorrow either? But, you know. How's things going out in the United States out there?
What do you mean, how's it going? It's going.
Yeah.
Day by day.
All you can ask for.
That's it. Ripping my hair out at work, writing and rewriting this damn application.
Well, I tried to get you some help, Dan, but the guys down there undercut my buddy that I tried to get hired out there.
They didn't want
to pay him money.
But down where I am?
Yep.
Wow.
They offered him shit for pay, so.
I'm surprised. That sucks.
I hope to hell that you're making a lot more than what they offered him.
I hope so too. Actually, I'm making a pretty good amount right now, so more than I've ever made, and you know, it sucks to say this, but if only me and my wife could get our act together, you know, get this back together as she comes back, I'll be living in Fat City. But, oh, man.
Yeah, good, man.
It's terrible to look at it that way, but, you know, in some regards, I'm like, damn, man. If only, you know, Fat City.
You know, that's what I got to do, too. I got to get my wife out here and get her hooked up with a decent vocation, I think, and see if I can get her making some money, make life a little easier on us, too. She got to make good money because she has to pay for me to buy Alan's motorcycle. That's what it is. I'll work on it.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah, man.
What time do you have to be at work at?
I have to be at work at about 8:15. Normally it would be 8:30 to 5, but I got to do 8:15 to 5:15 because if I wait until 5, I can't catch my train.
Uh-huh.
My train lets out like 4 blocks away from the building I work in. So I need that 15 minutes to walk the 4 blocks and catch my train. Otherwise, I'm stuck there for another hour before I can get another train that comes out this far, because downtown is way, way the fuck out in the middle of nowhere on the regional rail line.
Man.
But I'll tell you what, you know, I remember making comments to you before about your lengthy commute that you have.
Right.
And, you know, mine really isn't that bad. But then again, I'm not driving it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that makes a lot of difference right there.
Yeah. When you sit down in the train, it's quiet time. It's free time. Most people read. You know, when they get on the train, everybody walks in with their newspaper or whatever. You know, I haven't been reading. I just like looking at the scenery right now until I get bored with that, and I'll probably start reading stuff. But, you know, it's nice. It's a nice time to ramp yourself up and get prepared for your day or unwind afterwards. And, you know, you got the commute time anyway, but when you ride the train, you don't have to pay attention.
Right.
You just get in there and sit down and do your thing and fat, dumb, and happy, you know? But it's real different having to do, you know, 11-hour days instead of 8.5 hours for me. You know, it's 11.5 hours, something like that, because of the hour and 20-minute each way train ride and stuff like that. But it's all right. Wish I was home earlier, but it's all right. It's all new yet, too. I don't know. So what I missed tonight? I hear that Pat had a baby.
Yes, he did.
Now that's pretty cool. Congratulations, Pat. I know you'll listen to this. little baby boy. I didn't even look. I didn't even see it in the forums or anything. My wife called me and told me. She read it. So.
Yeah, he stopped by for a bit at the beginning. She had him last night. And then we had the outdoor, which Alan and I had really no clue about. But it went off well.
Good. Outstanding.
Yeah. Actually, I got to close things up a little early here tonight because I got things I need to do.
Cool, and I need to get going too because I'm using up all my cell phone minutes.
Yeah. You know what? I need to give you a call after the show, Link, because I need to pass a message on to you.
Cool.
So I will give you buzz. I will give you a ring in a few minutes.
All right.
All right.
All right. You guys have a great one.
You too. And
you too. We'll maybe see you this weekend.
Yeah. Good night, everybody.
Take it easy.
Have a good one.
Bye-bye. Any last words for you, Alan?
No, I'm good for this evening.
All right.
Not that I had all that many words to begin with, but.
Okay, here's I'm going to play us a song from Songfight again by Artist Beefy. It's called, doesn't have a name, TW3RP, Songfight. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week, okay?
Good night, everybody.
Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Hey, yo, Sny, I want to tell a story. Have been changed to protect the innocent. Get out your motherfucking seat.
DJ Snyder.
Come on. Come on.
Do it all.
Nickel play to Nicholas or nickel for short. The pleasing charming sort. When we were kids, we used to play Fort. In our younger years, when I was the Green Ranger in my mind's eye. Monday night Raws, when my kind would rock the tie-dye. Nickel was a cool guy, just after reading sci-fi. Till some knucklehead popular types wanted to hurt my bestest best friend forever. I had to use fists. I never promote violence, but I will promote this. But I couldn't be around 24 hours of the day. And these bastards got their kicks in the most despicable ways. Tell them to shoo away, but insects they keep swarming. Like Norman in the 90s was the way these kids were storming. And the principal did nothing, man, that dude was a jerk. He just called my fat ass lazy and my best friend a twerk. So it was work, 40 plus OT, keeping Nick Bruce free. And it's not like these kids didn't get off on trying to bruise me. Conspiracy, when I was getting pulled out of class. Helpless in ISS while they were beating his ass. I wasn't thinking too fast, I was running my mouth. With every syllable, another hurtful night in his house. But I was younger and I was too dumb to figure it out. Yeah, I'm too stubborn and too stupid, that's what I was about. But at night, we meet up with internet and a coke. And even with a life so painful, he was first to tell a joke. And you'll hear what you'll hear, and you'll feel what you'll feel. But Nick produced emotions that was harder to steal. And first-person shooters was a way to escape. This isn't going where you're thinking, I just ask you to wait. You see, over the years, my boy developed his dexterity and raised his GPA at the risk of his popularity. And his home situation wasn't ideal, to say the least. So, of course, he was visited daily by the Marines. And the recruiters, they would grill him, and they'd hassle his mom, talking about pride and honor in the hunt for Saddam, and how he has him a bomb and how it's ready to launch. Let's meet up and talk tomorrow and we'll buy you some lunch. And if you join with us, you can do whatever you please. I was the first to tell Nickel that this juice wasn't worth the squeeze. And I said, yo, I'll protect it till the day I rock a toupee. That to say, I think those words are what drove him away. End of the day, guess a guy's gotta be his own man, even if that means you're gonna get stationed in Iran. But Nickel, he was smart and not afraid of some work. And after years of working out, no one would call him a twerk. And I was reeling from the hurt when my friend put on the camo and started making jokes about Bin Laden with the camel. When he left, it's like he was already dead in my eyes. A salute and middle finger when we said our goodbyes. And yo, I have me this pride, I won't admit that I cry. When I see the bumper stickers that all resimplify. Never wanted to die, I may be weak, but I'm stronger than that. I just want my motherfucking brother back.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tunnel brush.
Shut up.
Just shut up. It's over.
It's over.
That's it. I'll see you next week, man. Have a good one.
Have a good one.
Take it easy. Bye-bye. Bye.